Hey there, everyone. My name, as you know, is Joe Hearn with Intentional Retirement, and I'm joined today by a very special guest named Joshua Becker. Joshua is a best-selling author and speaker and is the brains behind the hugely popular website becomingminimalist.com. And as you can probably guess, we're going to be talking about the concept of minimalism today and how that lifestyle can help you and me and others to live a more intentional, meaningful retirement by helping us clear the clutter and focus more intently on the things that are important to us. So, Joshua, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here. Thanks so much for the invitation, Joe.
Yeah, you bet. And you're out in sunny Arizona, correct?
I am out in sunny Phoenix, Arizona, which it's about to get even sunnier and hotter, but right now the days are lovely.
Nice. There you go. Hey, I thought maybe a good jumping off point, you know, there might be some people, hearing us today that, already know you and kind of your backstory and have visited your site and read your stuff, but there might be a lot of people that haven't. So I thought maybe a good jumping off point would just be, to tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of how you came to the point in your life of just wanting to explore or adopt this minimalist lifestyle.
Yeah, I love sharing the story and introducing people to the idea and the concept of minimalism through it. Grew up pretty middle class, a pretty typical suburban family is generally how I describe it. My dad is and was a banker and did some investment representative. My mom was a teacher and did a variety of different jobs, so pretty middle class. I took on the same lifestyle as I got married and ended up living up in Vermont for a number of years, where my first interaction and introduction to minimalism took place. I had a 5-year-old son and a 2-year-old daughter, and I always say that I generally had two streams of discontent that were rolling through my life. I was never very satisfied with my finances. We were never in debt, but always paycheck to paycheck. Like, I think the statistics say 70% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck. So this is how we were living. Always had a little growing discontent about that, knowing that, I was probably one blown water heater or one blown transmission away from going into significant debt. Also, I had a growing discontent with where my, I don't know how to say it other than my life's energy and where it was going. Until a Saturday morning, it was Memorial Day about 6 years ago, and I went out to clean my garage because it had been a long winter, and this is what Americans do on the weekends, right? We clean our house and we take care of our stuff. So I begin cleaning the garage. My 5-year-old son's with me. I'm kind of hoping he's going to help me with the garage. I haven't seen him all week after working, and it's a Saturday, and it's beautiful. And he, of course, wants nothing to do with cleaning out the garage. He sees a whistle ball and a whistle ball bat, and he runs into the backyard, asks me to come play with him. I'm like, I can't, Salem. I can't come play with you. I got to clean the garage. Well, he comes back about every 20 minutes, as kids do, asking to play. And every time I got to push him off, I can't. I got to finish the garage. And I'm kind of picturing the best thing is to pull everything out and hose it all down, return it all back, nice, organized for the summer. Well, this goes on for hours, as some of these projects tend to do, and I'm getting, like, there's a growing frustration just with the morning. I wasn't frustrated with my son asking me. I was growing frustrated that I had to be doing the project I was doing. Started talking to my neighbor. She's in her 80s, and she was outside doing the landscaping on her house, which I always hope my wife does the landscaping on our house when we're in our 80s. But I remember just commenting to her about, the frustration, and she's the first person to ever say to me, she said, well, maybe you don't have to own so much stuff. My daughter's a minimalist, and she keeps telling me that I own too much. I remember looking at the pile of things in my driveway, the dirty and dusty, I'd spent all morning, taking care of and cleaning up and knowing full well that my possessions weren't adding any joy or purpose into my life. But as I look at the pile of stuff in my driveway, and then I noticed my son alone in the backyard, suddenly I had this realization that everything I owned wasn't bringing happiness, purpose, fulfillment into my life. But even worse than that, all those things were distracting me from the very thing that did bring me joy and happiness, purpose, and fulfillment, my son. And so I was in, like, that moment in, I remember saying, I don't know for sure what minimalism is, but I can see how all the things I own aren't making my life better. They're actually taking me away from the things that do make my life better. So this began our process of getting rid of the things that we didn't need.
That's good. So then, as you started doing that, I think in certainly in my mind when I first kind of explored the concept of minimalism, and I think in a lot of people's minds, it's very it's very focused on the stuff aspect of it, which I think is an important aspect of it. But I think it goes beyond that sometimes too to maybe more areas of our life. I mean, how would you, if you were to give somebody a 30-second elevator speech on minimalism or definition of minimalism, what would it be?
Yeah, sure. Maybe I'll go longer than 30 seconds. I remember running inside and telling Kim, hey, like, I'm interested in this minimalism thing. And she said, oh, that sounds interesting. Why don't you go look it up? And so I went online and I found these different people. There's a guy who owned 15 things that fit in his backpack, and he moved to a new country every 4 months. And I'm like, I don't want to move every 4 months. And I read about these people who moved on to a farm, and to people who sold their house in the city and, you know, went to live in just a little tiny home out in the middle of the forest. And I'm like, that's not what I want my life to look like. I can see that I own too much stuff, but I'm not interested in giving up the life that I'm living, because I was working at a church at the time, and like, we had people in our home two or three times a week, and we enjoyed being involved in our community and our neighborhood. And I'm like, okay, if I'm gonna tackle minimalism, like, it's gonna look very unique to me. It's gonna be about what I think my life needs to be about. What is my purpose and what are my values? And then what things do I need to own in order to accomplish those things? And what things do I have to get rid of that are just distracting me from it? So this became our definition of minimalism. It became the intentional promotion of the things we most value and the removal of everything that distracts us from it. And so certainly for us, this started out with our physical possessions and getting rid of them. But we found through that, number one, we are forced to define what was important, what we want our life to be about, because you can't decide what you're going to hold on to until you know what you're trying to be and what you're trying to do. And then as we began making those decisions, then it began trickling into all other areas of our life, things like, you know, our commitments and our schedule. It began impacting even our physical bodies, the way I ate and the exercise and fitness that I began to value because of it. So it started with physical possessions, but once we knew what we wanted to be about, then that began influencing all other aspects of our life as well.
Hmm. Yeah, I heard kind of a definition of it that appealed to me, and I can't even remember where I read it at one point. I mean, it might have been on your side or, you know, somewhere else online or something like that. But you just talked about, a lifestyle that helps people question what things add value to their lives, you know. And then once you do that, you can kind of get rid of the clutter. And that's exactly your definition. Give us your definition one more time in terms of the
Yeah, minimalism is the promotion of the things I most value and the removal of everything that distracts me from it.
Right. And it seems like the thing that distracts us, at least here in the United States, most often. So it's deciding what's important to you. So, you know, that might be some of your things, but a lot of times that might more likely be relationships or purpose or, you know, meaningful work or pursuits or something like that. But it seems like the thing that distracts us a lot of times here in the United States, at least, is our stuff, you know, because there is this society where, you know, there's just so much focus either consciously or unconsciously on, you know, having more stuff. I remember you saying something on your website once that really rang true with me. Printed off here to read it real quick. As a result, many of us pursue and collect large stockpiles of possessions in the name of security or happiness. We work long hours to purchase them. We build bigger houses to store them. We spend large amounts of energy maintaining them. And then the burden of accumulating and maintaining slowly becomes the main focus of our lives. And I was like, man, that is convicting. When it comes to, you know, when it comes to stuff. I mean, do you agree, or do you see that a lot of times with people when you're talking to them that it's the stuff a lot of times that gets in the way? So that's a good starting point, or
I think it is a the best starting place. I think other places, you know, other people can get there different routes, but. So we see 5,000 advertisements every single day. I think statistics say by the time we're age 21, we've seen a million advertisements. And they all, like, they all have the same message. You know, more is better. If you buy what we're selling, your life is going to be happier. And we all know it's not true, right? Like we, I've never sat across the table from somebody and said, hey, what is really most important to you in life? No one ever says owning a lot of stuff. This is never what's most important to them. But we just hear these messages so many times that we begin to believe it even more than we realize that we've bought into what they're selling. And it isn't until we have this light bulb moment, you know, for me outside the garage where I start looking around my house and I look at all the things that I own that I don't need, that aren't really making me any happier. And suddenly I come to this realization of, wait a minute, how did all this happen? Like, it was in and of itself a loss of intentionality, right? Like, if I had laid out my life, I never would have said, I'm just going to own a whole bunch of stuff. It would have been, hey, I want to, you know, faith and family and friends, like these are what's important to me. But somewhere along the way, our thinking gets sidetracked and our worldview gets changed. And when we realize that it has been, then we're like, wait a minute, I haven't been living as intentional a life as I could have been. And when we see it in our possessions, then it starts to filter into other things as well. So I always say, yeah, start with your possessions. Just start going through your house and putting into bags everything that you don't need, you know, that doesn't even need to be in your house. And by about the second or third or fourth bag full of stuff, you'll start to think, man, why did I buy all this? You know, like where was my thinking hijacked in this area? And where else in my life can I be a little more intentional, a little more focused?
Right. Do you think, so obviously at my side, I'm writing for, writing on the topic of retirement and living an intentional lifestyle and whatnot, which I think sometimes people tend to equate more with kind of the, latter stages in life when you've achieved some financial independence and whatnot. Does minimalism look any different for, say, the 20 or 30-year-old versus the 50 or 60-year-old? Both in terms of the practical outlay of that, or the mindset going into it, like the reasons for doing it.
Well, I think that I don't think the mindset needs to change, but I do think that the very practical outworkings of how that looks tend to change. So, you know, in my early 20s. You know, if I'm single and I don't have a family, you know, I have a lot of freedom to, I can move whenever I want to move. I don't have to, you know, carry a lot of possessions that don't concern me, right? And then we get into our, you know, late 20s or 30s and we start having families and we start having kids. And suddenly we realize that, okay, life isn't just about me, right? Like, hopefully we realized that before, but it really becomes clear once we have families. Okay, life isn't just about me, but now I'm serving other people and I'm carrying, you know, some weight. I'm carrying some burden. I have things in my home that are for my kids, and I have things in my home that are for us as a family, and I'm okay with that. It looks different than if I was just living out of a backpack out of the trunk of my car. I think then as we, you know, get older and kids move out of the house, there becomes this interesting mix of, okay, I don't have the day-to-day burden, you know, of someone else living in my home with me, especially when we reach that empty nest stage. But I still realize that my life is for things more than just myself, right? And so what am I keeping that I can still contribute to the community, and I can still contribute to society, and I can still be a resource for other people, for younger families. And so I think that these things kind of converge as we get older, and the philosophy never changes. What do I not, you know, what's not essential for me to have that I can part with, that I can remove, but also, you know, what do I want to be about, and what do I need to keep in order to accomplish that, if that makes sense and answers that question. Is that where we were headed there?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. What do you think, like, with and, you know, during my day job, I'm a financial planner, so I help people, you know, invest their money and, you know, save and grow their assets and those sort of things. And, you know, a lot of times people have, at least I look at the mindset of a person who's approaching retirement, and they say, okay, I've saved and I've sacrificed, you know, all of my life, and you know, this next phase that I'm transitioning into is going to be, you know, my time to really kind of live and actually live the life that they've always wanted to live, kind of a thing. And they do have a measure, at least, of financial independence. So minimalism isn't really a requirement. You know, like, I was a minimalist out of college because I didn't have anything, you know. I mean, I couldn't afford to, you know, do anything or whatever. But I know, especially by your definition, that it's so much more than that. But, like, what would you say to a person that's approaching retirement, that is going to be kind of transitioning into that phase, and they have the means to do some of those things, but it's not, you know, they don't necessarily have to still ascribe to that lifestyle. I mean, what are some of the benefits to adopting a minimalist lifestyle for retirees, even though they might not necessarily have to based on their, you know, income or financial place in life?
Yeah, great question. Thanks for the opportunity to get to answer it, even. Right, like there are significant financial benefits to owning less and to buying less. I can live on, if I can live on less, I can, you know, I can choose a job based on more than money. You know, I can find a meaningful work. I can find something that I really want to do because I don't need as much money to live on. But the reality of life is that all of our resources are limited in one way or another. I mean, our lives are finite. We have a finite amount of money. Some of us have more than others. But we have a finite number of days. We have a finite amount of energy, you know, a finite amount of mental capacity. You know, all these things are limited. And minimalism says, okay, I want to remove the meaningless so that I can replace it with the meaningful. And so even if finances aren't the reason why I would own less, it can still be because, okay, I just only have so many days. I only have so much free time, even if I'm retired and every day is free time. There's still only so many days left. How many of those days do I really want to sacrifice just cleaning and managing and organizing and taking care of the things that I own? Wouldn't my life be better served if I had to spend less time on those things so that I could spend more time and more energy on the things that are really important to me and really bring me really bring me joy. I like to think of it as everything we own, you know, occupies a little bit of physical space in our life, but also everything that we own also occupies a little bit of mental space. And everything that we own is just one more thing to worry about, one more thing that has to be taken care of. And as we remove those things, not only do we find, you know, financial freedom in that, but we find emotional and mental, and we find time. We find all these things freed up that are so important to us that, you know, we can't buy them even if we wanted to.
That's great. That reminds me of a quote that Thoreau said once, and I'm probably going to get this incorrect, but you get the idea. He said something to the effect of, "The price of anything is the amount of life that you exchange for it." I think sometimes, you know, if we can afford something, we assume that's the, you know, that's the cost. I want to go out and buy X, so I give you, you know, this amount of money, and you give that back to me, and that's the cost. But really, what you're saying is, you know, whatever it is that you buy or own, that's going to take some of your time, some of your money, some of your effort, some of your, you know, distraction, space, all those sort of things, you know, and the ultimate cost of whatever it is that you got is, you know, the amount of your overall life that you had to exchange for it in the form of, you know, time, money, effort, mental anguish.
Yeah, you know, I find minimalism to be just a less stressful way to live. And you can picture this as you know, look at your house and think of, you know, just close your eyes and think of the one room that's a cluttered mess. Maybe it's the garage or the attic, you know, and you picture that, and then you just picture the one room in your house that's orderly and it's clean and it's organized, you know, a living room or a dining room or something, and you just feel the weight of too much stuff compared to a room that has just the right amount. And, you know, we don't even realize how much of our life we're wasting, you know, we're losing, we're spending on just owning more stuff than we need.
Yeah, I've written before at my site on maintenance versus milestones, you know, and I think we all have a certain amount of maintenance that we have to do in our lives, you know, going to the doctor, you know, going grocery shopping, you know, washing the car, all those sort of things, you know, but it's the milestones that we remember, you know, the birthdays or the travel or the time with family or, you know, those sort of things that are going to stick out in our mind as we look back on our life. And, you know, the beauty of kind of the minimalism lifestyles that allows us to focus less, you know, exactly like what you just said, focus less on maintaining, you know, kind of our stuff and our lifestyle and more on focusing on those things that are important to us. So.
Yeah, I think it allows us to create more milestones and have less maintenance.
Yeah, exactly. What was I going to ask you here? I had something I wanted to ask in relation to that, and it just... Oh, yeah. So like, I'm totally on board in terms of the stuff thing, and kind of my at least my personal philosophy before has been, you know, I spend less on stuff. You know, I don't really care what kind of a car I drive or those sort of things, but I do care about certain experiences like travel or those sort of things. So I, you know, I spend less on stuff and more on experiences. You know, but I mean, there's other kind of bloggers and writers that I read. You know, I mean, one guy in particular that, you know, he's both anti-stuff and experiences, and he's like, you should just save and have the financial independence there, and that's what ultimately brings, you know, peace or whatever. I mean, do you have an opinion there one way or the other, stuff versus experiences versus neither, or just focus on what's important to you, or... And you can totally, like, you're not going to hurt my feelings one way or the other, so just whatever you think, so...
No, I'm trying to think of how to phrase this. So what I think happens is, as we begin removing possessions and just reminding ourselves that we're not going to find happiness, we're not going to find fulfillment there, you know, stop looking for it there, And as we stop, you know, as we begin buying less and owning less, then we do free up resources, money, time, energy. And we have to ask the question then, okay, if I'm not going to find fulfillment in things, where am I going to begin to look elsewhere for it? And we're forced to ask that question, and we're forced to answer it. And people answer it in different ways. So some people say, okay, I'm not going to look for it in the things that I own. I'm going to start looking for fulfillment in travel and in, you know, having these amazing experiences and crossing things off my bucket list. This is where I'm going to look for fulfillment. So they readjust and they start looking at there. It sounds like this guy, you know, who you're referring to says, okay, I'm not going to look for fulfillment in physical possessions, but I'm also not going to look for fulfillment in experiences, but I'm going to look for fulfillment in financial independence and having a large nest egg, that this is where I'm going to look for it instead. And, you know, people define that differently. And I'm one that tends to think, I don't know if any of those three are ever going to fully satisfy. Like, I'm a pretty spiritual person, and you know, faith is very important to me. And I think, okay, that's where I'm going to find my fulfillment is in my faith and is in my family and is in relationships with other people. And, you know, sometimes these experiences and these trips, you know, benefit me in, you know, faith-filled ways and ways with my family. And so in that way, they contribute to it. But ultimately, I think we always answer that question differently. And, you know, so we start chasing after trips and experiences, and we get into it, and we're like, oh, you know what, this isn't as great as I thought it was going to be. This feels a little empty. And so we're able to look somewhere else. Or, you know, we look to a large, you know, savings account, and like, you know what, it's never been bigger, but I'm not sure I'm any more fulfilled than I was before. What else could I do? What else could I try? But it's not until we remove the pursuit of that in possessions that we're able to even begin trying it out in some of these different areas until we finally find it.
That's good. Just as you were talking there, it kind of made me think a little bit of a tangent to that same discussion a little bit, and just gearing this towards retirees. You know, a lot of times, you know, we realize as we get older that each day kind of subtracts from fewer and fewer. You know, we have a limited time, you know, left on Earth, and one discussion I'll have with clients a lot of times will, you know, will be about legacy, you know, and what, you know, what kind of legacy you're going to leave. And it seems like the, you know, the older we get, the more, you know, I don't know if it's just human nature or, you know, what it is where we want to, you know, have done something or left something that maybe, you know, kind of outlasts our time here on this earth or whatever. I know you wrote recently a little bit about, I think you called it immortality symbols or something, but I think you were just talking about legacy in relation to that or whatever. But if you have a retiree that's kind of thinking about that, and that's kind of the front of their mind, and they're thinking about, okay, what am I going to leave once I'm gone? What are some of the ways, you know, that people can do that better? If they've kind of adopted that minimalist lifestyle and your definition of that, as opposed to, you know, a lot of times I think people's first, you know, first lever that they try to grab at with legacy is, I'm going to leave my kids a bunch of money, you know, or I'm going to leave this big business that I built or something like that. What are some other different, you know, better, you know, ways that people can do that?
Yeah, great question. Yeah, Ernest Becker, which is the philosopher who at least best that I know first coined the phrase immortality symbols, that we all know we're going to die. We're all, you know, confronted with our mortality, and so to to fight that fear or to escape that fear, we work on building, you know, a legacy, something that's going to outlive us when we die physically. That's how we counteract that fear. And you are absolutely right that most people, when they hear, you know, when they think of legacy or when they think of what they're going to leave to their kids or to their grandkids, it almost always becomes financial. And Dale Carnegie, you know, who is may have been, you know, the richest man alive at the time, he may have said one time, actually a number of times, where he says, "A man who dies rich dies disgraced." As if to say that being a good saver, that being a good financial planner is not the best legacy that we can leave to our kids. Like it's good to save, it's good to be financially wise, but I want my kids to say different things about me rather than he made and he saved a lot of money. Like, I want them to be able to say he was a generous man. He cared for people. When he saw a need in the world and had the resources to address it, he did. He was selfless, and he gave himself to other people. I want them to say that I was generous. I want them to say that, you know, I mentioned faith earlier. I want them to know that my faith is important to me, and maybe it's not faith for someone else. Maybe it's, you know, the environment or animals or clean water. You know, he was very passionate about this cause, and he supported that cause not just with his mouth and with his lips, but with his money and with his wallet. And so I think as we think through legacy, like, what do we want our kids to say about us? And then are my financial decisions lining up with that? You know, if I've built a business, you know, and it's the type of business that I can pass on to my kids, I'm not so sure I want to liquidate that, you know, and not have anything that I pass on to them, you know, along those lines, if it's something that they can continue building upon. But I don't know. I'm personally not excited about, you know, leaving a lot of cash to my kid. You know, there's a lot of studies that say that this is harmful to people. To, you know, it's like winning the lottery sometimes, and this big influx of money, and they get used to this new, you know, lifestyle, and it's hard for them to go back when the money runs out. You know, there's just better things. There's just better things that we want to be said about us. And so when you think legacy, think that way, not just financial.
Yeah, that's good. It's interesting, too, how, as you were talking about that, I was thinking about kind of mindset and how you can sometimes have two different people that do the exact same thing but for different reasons that accomplishes different results. You know, so like tying a few different ideas together, you know, we were talking about experiences. If your main idea with, you know, is that, hey, I'm all about experiences, and the only reason you do that is selfish and to check off your bucket list and whatever the case is, you know, you're going to get one result out of that. And, you know, if your main experience, you know, like my wife and I have had this conversation a lot with travel, you know, and we realize, okay, we've only got one child, you know, she's 9 years old, she's not going to be at the house for very much longer, you know, we want to make sure that we're being intentional about, you know, taking time to spend time as a family and kind of, you know, build those memories and that kind of institutional knowledge or, you know, kind of legacy that we'll live on and that we'll all have in our memories as we go forward. You know, and so that manifests itself in our family a lot with travel. But I'm guessing if you had, you know, again, two different people, one focusing on something purely for selfish reasons, the other person may be doing the exact same thing but for different reasons, you're going to end up with a different result or a different legacy from that action. Yes or no? Or?
Oh, yeah, I think entirely so. I think our intentions, you know, determine the outcome. You know, one of the you know, one of the streams of discontent that I had had through, you know, so much of my life was that I wanted to be selfless. You know, I wanted to be generous. I'm pretty convinced if you get 100 people in a room and you ask them, you know, how many of you want to be generous people, that 99.5 of them raise their hands. You know, I think that we all want to be generous, and we know the importance of it, and that we know it's valuable. You know, rare is the person that doesn't want to be known as generous. But when I would look at my life, I wasn't being generous. I mean, 90% of my finances I was spending on myself. And I'm like, wait a minute, this doesn't seem right. You know, compared to the rest of the world, you know, I'm the top 0.5%. You know, I'm the, you know, in the middle class, the wealthiest nation in the world, and yet I need to spend 90% of my money on myself. This can't be right. There must be a different way. And it was minimalism that began to, you know, bring contentment in that way. It began to solve that problem for me of, hey, wait a minute, if I just bought less stuff, I would have more resources to become that person that I want to be. And you know, this relates to travel, and this relates to, you know, possessions, and you know, so relates to savings, you know, and how much we're holding back for ourselves. And if we can get to the point where we can understand the value of selflessness, but we can understand that we can get there and we can be there, then certainly I think our outcomes come out far differently than if we're doing it all for selfish motives.
Right. Let's talk for a few minutes just about maybe some practical steps we can take so people, you know, can kind of have a few takeaways from the call in terms of, you know, what are some... And again, maybe thinking of a person who's approaching retirement. So, you know, someone in their 50s or 60s, kind of getting ready to transition in that next phase in life. What are maybe three or four key areas where they get a lot of bang for their buck in terms of trying to simplify and streamline and kind of cut through some of the clutter, you know, in their life? And then maybe in each of those three or four areas, what would be a couple of practical ways, you know, from your experience that, you know, that somebody could, you know, go about doing that? For example, you know, an area might be relationships or, you know, clutter in your house or, you know, work or commitments or any of those things.
Sure. Let me just tackle possessions for a moment. And if you want to, you know, go on to the next part, we can, but... So this is an important topic for 50s, 60s, 70s. You know, when I go speak on this and it's open, you know, open to the community, there are a large percentage of people in this early retirement, just retired mindset that are there. You know, I think that they can, as you mentioned, they, you know, can feel the weight of remaining days and begin to feel the weight of their possessions as, you know, there's less, you know, maybe less even physical ability or physical resources to take care of them. So it resonates very well with this age group. And so, right, like that's the question. Okay, I get it. I agree that I own too much stuff. Where do I start? And I always say start easy. Like start with the very low-hanging fruit. Literally, my first thing that I decluttered, simplified, minimized, however you want to say it, was my car. You know, I was cleaning my garage. I pulled my car out into the street, and as I drove it back into the garage, I'm looking around, and there's sunglasses, and there's maps, and there's CDs, and there's Happy Meal toys, and ketchup packets, and I'm like, why are all these things in my car? They don't need to be. They're not used anymore. They're just left over from one time that I use them. What are they doing in this space? And so I took everything out of my car, got in it the next morning to drive to work, and I just sat down and I looked around. I'm like, this feels so nice. to not have any of the visual distraction that was there before. My car gets me from point A to point B, and I'm not, you know, shuffling things around on my way to get there. So I would say start easy. After we did our car, we went into our living room and literally just took a bag or a box and, okay, what decorations do we not even like that much anymore? What are all these DVDs doing here and this magazine rack and these old newspapers? And just took all the stuff that we knew we didn't need to have there and just went room by room by room. And every time I think we got this sense of hey, this feels lighter. This feels freer to own less stuff. So that's what we did, and that's what I tell people. Just, like, pick an easy room, you know, a room that you live in, a living room or a bedroom or a bathroom perhaps, your car, and just take everything out that you don't need. And then the next time you're in the room, take notice of how this feels and if this is something that you want to be true of the rest of your house as well. And, you know, eventually you'll get to the more difficult places like the garage and, you know, the attic, and the kitchen tends to take a lot of time. But start easy and work your way up there. You know, certainly there's, you know, as you're, you know, reaching, as you do that, you're kind of forced to decide, okay, what do I want to be about and what do I need to keep? You know, one of the things that I would encourage anybody is to, if you had a home that was for your family, but your family isn't there anymore, you know, maybe they come back to visit every so often, but I would reassess your living needs. And I would say, do I need to live in this big of a house anymore? Because you probably don't. And if you can move into a smaller place, my mother-in-law just moved into a villa where, you know, they take care of all the yard work for her, and she's able to leave, you know, when she comes and visits us for a few weeks in the wintertime, you know, there's someone there to watch over the house and take care of it. And I would challenge anyone who is retired or is about to retire just to reassess, can I move into a smaller house? And as you do, you'll be forced to downsize some of those things, but you'll find so much freedom on the other side because of it. And then one last thing, because I hear this a lot, you know, that someone has to go through everything you own at one point or another. Like, everything you own has to be touched and a decision has to be made. And either you are going to make it or your kids are going to make it after you die. And, man, the easier you can make that for them, the better. You know, I think that sometimes we hold on to things just because we don't, you know, have the energy to get rid of them, or, you know, don't take the time to go through them, and we don't care anything about them, but we pass away, you know, and suddenly my daughter, you know, is going through my house and trying to decide what to keep, and she's seeing plates and decorations, and she's like, oh, this really must have been important to Mom, you know, this really must have been important to Dad, he saved it for 40 years, how could I possibly get rid of it? And meanwhile, we don't even care that much about it. We just didn't take the time to get rid of it. And so, man, this process of downsizing benefits you in the short run. It benefits you in the long run. It benefits your kids. I would start right away on it.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's made me think. I mean, one of the interesting things about my job sometimes, I think, or one of the benefits of my job, is that I get to kind of see people in those phases of life prior to me getting to those phases of life, so I can kind of gain some insights from them. And it's interesting, I've been to a lot of, because I've had a lot of clients or family members or whatever that have passed away, and then I've kind of showed up to help with that process of, you know, either getting the house ready for sale or, you know, decluttering things or, you know, getting things to family members where it goes and whatnot. And again, I've been to more of those than most people, and I've never been to one that didn't involve a dumpster.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
And it always just kind of struck me where it's like, here's a bunch of stuff that person, you know, either thought was important and consciously made a decision to keep, or kind of by not making a decision, they made a decision, you know, to keep it and leave that decision to somebody else. But most of it ends up in the dumpster, you know. And again, not that we don't have things that we want to, you know, pass on to our kids and that our kids would love to have, or that could be donated somewhere where it would be a benefit or whatever. But yeah, there just seems to be always so much stuff that you know, once the important things are passed out, so much of that stuff just ends up in the dumpster, and it's kind of a harsh reality sometimes, I think, to kind of make you think, okay, what in my house ultimately is going to end in the dumpster? Why don't I go ahead and do that now?
Yeah.
So I don't have to keep pushing it around, you know?
Yeah, because it frees us up when we get rid of it, and we don't have to worry about it, and we don't have to care for it, and we just don't realize how much mental capacity is being filled up with those things until we get rid of them and start to find that freedom on the other side.
Yeah. Joshua, I know you've written, you write tons of stuff at your blog that people can go to, again, becomingminimalist.com to read for free or whatever. I know you've written, you know, several books and guides and those sort of things. I mean, do you have kind of any of your resources that after our conversation today, again, obviously people aren't obligated to go out, but I know you've got some great stuff out there. I mean, anything, you know, off the top of your head that you have as far as resources go that maybe people could go to your website and check out that would be a benefit to do some of the things we were talking about today?
Yeah, probably two of them. Obviously the website, becomingminimalist.com, and I would just send everybody there. You know, from there you can find me on Facebook and, you know, subscribe to newsletter. Like, you can find from the website. But there's really two books that I would recommend. And the first one is real inexpensive. It's real short. It's called Simplify. And it's only digital, you know. So if you've never read on a Kindle or, you know, read on your computer screen, this is a great first one because it's like 40 pages, so it's not. And it's a quick read. It you'll be like, oh, this ain't so bad reading on a computer. So, Simplify, you know, lays out, you know, retells my story, lays out some of the benefits of it. People find it very motivating, and people read it, and they're so, let's start getting rid of some of these things. So looking for extra motivation in that way. The other book we released in January is called Clutter Free with Kids, and so, you know, like you with a 9-year-old daughter, you know, if someone's listening and they have young kids or teenagers or whatever, and they're like, I don't know how I could ever do this with kids in the house. You know, the book is written just to provide some very practical, very to indeed make that a reality. So I would send them if they're just looking for some short that they want to read, you know, Simplify can probably be read in about an hour and a half. I think most people can get through it.
There you go. That's good. Good. Well, I totally appreciate you taking some time to talk with us today. I think tons of great stuff in there, and I think, again, kind of that minimalism philosophy, I think, dovetails well with kind of our philosophy and intentional retirement in terms of trying to be intentional with life and focus on the things that are important to you, and the best way to do that is, like you said, to get rid of everything that's not important to you. That frees up your time and your money and your mental effort and everything like that to focus on those things that are. So thanks so much for taking some time to join us.
Well, I really appreciate the conversation. Thanks again for having me.
Yep, you bet. Hey, sit tight for just one second, okay?